Thank you very much. Co-chairs Al Kukesh and Tim Tawarak, President Kitka, the board of directors of the Alaska Federation of Natives, delegates, honored guests, and people from my home region, Nana. We are very honored to have been invited to speak to the convention today, and we feel it's not because of any qualities that we might have, but a deep feeling among our people that is only through unity and the hard work of all of our generations that we can meet the challenges of the future. I personally have seen the focused effort of our young people as they have been working to prepare their minds, not just for their own livelihood, but for service to their people in every imaginable capacity. Let us give them a hand for their dedication and responsibilities that they are beginning to assume. They have put their mind and time into careers unimaginable in our youth. We can help them by encouraging them and offering to assist them, especially as they seek to learn our languages and maintain cultural ties. Let's give the young people a hand. Many of you have been to every convention of AFN since we organized it in 1966. And I cannot imagine another gathering that provides so much love and connections, such drama and excitement, such political tension, and such an orgy of shopping than AFN. Isn't that wonderful? If you were here at the first convention in 1966, we'd like to see you stand. Was anybody here in 1966? Okay, I see a few there, yeah. Well, I think our entire gathering just around the corner over here might have fit in that one little section over there. There's one group I always like to recognize for their role in helping buy tickets so that village people could attend the first convention back then, and that is the Tayonek tribe. Let's give Tayonek a hand. They also provided the meeting place, as a matter of fact. Another group that gave us some tremendous help at a time when AFN was literally broke, we could barely afford an office. Emil didn't even have a secretary. I remember when I came down to be his assistant, I checked one of the drawers, and there was this whole pile of letters that he didn't have time to answer because he had no help. But the Tlingit Haida provided a loan guarantee for over $100,000. Back then, that was a lot of money. Let's give Tlingit Haida a cheer. This year, the AFN board decided on the theme for the convention, Northern Dreams, Our Historic Journey Continues. When one looks at the timeline of our peoples, if the measure of 10,000 years is the yardstick, then the modern period is perhaps an eighth of an inch or less. It helps put into perspective the tremendous amount of change that we have had to deal with in a compressed period of time in all aspects of life. With all the stresses and strains that have been heaped upon us, I do not believe that we have fully appreciated the degree, speed, and complexity of change in how it has affected our people to this very day. In many ways, our world has been turned upside down. In historic times, change was slow and incremental as we developed the tools and technology to make a livelihood in our challenging environment. But create we did, and survive we did, and expand we did in the territories we occupied. In fact, I used to claim that as we moved across the Arctic all the way to Greenland, if we had 200 more years, we could have founded Europe. It was a good life, but it was a hard life. And many of you who are here understand what it was like to have no safety nets of any kind whatsoever. It was you and your family and your community working together to make a life. There was little room to slack off. It was work, and it required strength, commitment, and dedication to all the tasks that were required. When I think of the ancient Inupiaq woman of the North Slope who was found preserved in the permafrost and studied to learn about their way of life hundreds of years ago, her lungs and surrounding organs were black with the smoke of the seal oil lamp, cooking and sewing her entire life to ensure the survival of her children and family. That is the kind of dedication to life that our forebears had. Our people not only had natural elements to contend with, the cold, the wind, the ice, the current, the floods, the earthquakes, the eruptions, the fires, the famines, the uncertainty of the game. We began to have to endure the invasion of foreigners with guns who enslaved the people, the denuding of the oceans of whale and walrus, the pressures on the land from the gold stampedes, the proliferation of the canned salmon industry that built their processors along every major river that provided food for our people. In the meantime, we had no legal status whatsoever. We were not citizens of the new country that claimed sovereignty over us until late in our history. Our villages were laid bare by diseases of all kinds. Ever since the arrival of Sheldon Jackson and the early missionaries and schools, there has been a contentious battle for the hearts and minds of our people. I never fully understood this history that began generations before my time, but it has continued unabated, and it's something that I don't believe we have fully understood to this day. Many of the seeds of our negative self-perception and the beginning of the disintegration of our identity, of our languages and culture began with those who came here so many years ago to recreate us in their own image. This I never understood either, as I struggled in my own life to understand who I was and what I was supposed to do with my life. The unfortunate reality is that at another time in another age, and within the lifetimes of some of our people, there was a mentality that said it was not only permissible, but within the right and the obligation of the government and the church to begin to destroy our languages, our ceremonies, our histories, our potlatches, our gathering places, our totem poles, and our dances. The methodology of attack was the classroom and the pulpit, people who were instructed to ban our languages and our dances, the beginning of the effort to kill our cultural spirit. Without spirit, we begin to die. Along with this was the effective use of distance in the absence of parents and grandparents. As our children were shipped hither and yon to institutions, we were all a part of this mass migration away from our villages as we began to try to absorb the technicalities of the new life that our parents thought would be less difficult than that which they experienced. They also taught us obedience and not to question authority. To our detriment, as we at the 11th hour realized that our land was about to be taken out from right under us, and we had to fight on all fronts to secure a modicum of the land we formerly occupied. The passing generations that was raised in the 40s and 50s is the last generation that lived in the old world of dog teams and sod houses and tents, that experienced the extremely harsh conditions of life without safety nets, a time of hunger, of cold, and constant work. We have seen the material world improve in ways we could never imagine in those days. I have spoken many times to my friend Avirna, Oliver Levitt, of the times he had to go scour the beaches miles from home by dog team just to seek driftwood for his family to keep warm. Other times, when the only food for some families was tom cod, when not only were we hungry, but so were the dogs that we depended on for transport. In the meantime, diligent efforts were being made to figure out how to survive in the new economy of the wage world, even as our connections to our home and our language began to slacken, and the arrival of statehood brought new challenges to the control of our own spaces and resources. It looked like the beginning of the end of our old world. If anything, Alaska Native people are resilient and intelligent, the complete opposite of what was said by those who came to recreate us, who treated us as if we were children. The Constitutional Convention in 1955 was a model for those who came to recreate Alaska into something that was normal for them. It certainly was the beginning of the end of Alaska as our forebears knew it. The Statehood Act that followed merely cemented a process and institutions over which we had little or no say. We know what life has been the past half century or more. Materially speaking, we are still in the golden age, in contrast to what our people's lives were the past 10 millennia. Without steel, guns, mosquito dope, knives, pots and pans, and matches and binoculars, our life was hard. In my youth, we had literally no furniture in the sod house in which we lived with our family. There was no extra anything. Today, we are awash in material things that we couldn't possibly imagine. Yes, life is hard for many out there. We understand that. On the other hand, there are many organizations that we have painfully put together over the past generations that are there to help our people that we never had before either. The hope is that our people see that ultimately the key to their success lies in their own intelligence, commitment, and willpower to first prepare themselves for self-sufficiency and to take care of your family. Reliance on other institutions is an uneasy resting place for your future and that of your family. Today, my daughter, Segulik, is up here to convey her thoughts about her experience and our collective situation. Through her and participating with the First Alaskans Institute with young Native Alaskans over the past several years, I've seen firsthand the extremely hard work, dedication, and commitment the emerging leaders have put into their chosen professions and their effort to maintain connection to their people. We need to do all we can to encourage them, particularly in the area of language and culture. They want it, they need it, and we should provide it. They are beginning to take the reins of power and the responsibility that goes with it. And keeping that connection to the culture is very, very important. What of the future? I will not be here in 50 years. I've been able to see what's happened in the last 68 years. But my daughter Segulik may be here, my children and my grandchildren. Based on what I have seen in my lifetime, Alaskans throughout the state have constructed a massive series of infrastructure and institutions that in the end may be unaffordable. That is the scary part. As I see it, when it comes to the foreseeable future, there is no urban or rural divide. In many ways, we are all in the same canoe, so to speak. Unless there is some miraculous windfall to replenish what I call, quote, the Holy Grail, the gold at the end of the rainbow, the big rock candy mountain, all rolled into one, the oil that has been the engine of life to which we have been accustomed, we Alaskans have some very hard choices to make. Governor Egan, our first chief executive, would be amazed at what he could see today. In his day, he had no money to afford the little government in Alaska that we had in the early days of statehood. Between the oil taxes, the bonuses, the bonding by cities, the boroughs, the state agencies, and the success of our congressional delegation in securing federal funds, Alaska has had an unprecedented improvement in every walk of life. The big question is, can we afford it all in the future? How are we going to sustain it? How are we as Native people going to respond to the financial challenges ahead? As I see it, there are two arenas in which we need to focus for the long run, for our people: education for the children and health care, because without health, we cannot do anything. Our historic journey has been fraught with challenges provided by Mother Nature and with ideas and government notions that threaten our survival as special parts of the human race. How are we going to deal with the future? The challenges of global warming, the diminishing of state revenues that are the underpinning of so much that we have become accustomed to, the challenge of affordable energy in our villages, the challenge of maintaining our identity, our language, and values, the multiplicity of institutions that we have created, and the issue of subsistence and how to provide for our people from the land. Are we properly structured in the AFN to deal with the mighty challenges ahead? Nothing stays the same, and we have to accommodate ourselves to the new challenges that we are facing. I ask these questions on behalf of our generation that found a need for positive changes and did our best to make life better for our people. We have confidence that our children and our people will use the rock-hard willpower and inner strength and intelligence it took to survive these past 10 millennia to face the future. We could not have done it. We could have not done anything in the past without vision and unity, and that is our hope as we face the challenges ahead. Kleanuk. Ooh.